Welcome, everyone. Let's have some fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the BD Waterfowl Podcast. I am your lead producer and host, Walker Deering, along with some good buddies of mine, Mr. Grant Mims.
How are y'all doing today? Thank y'all for listening.
And Mr. Brian Butler.
Welcome, welcome.
And we are joined today by a special guest, a regional wildlife biologist for the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife, Mr. Joe, whose last name I didn't write down.
Oh, Lacefield.
Lacefield, yeah. I should have known that. I sent the email. But we're excited to have Joe on with us. He's our first super smart guest.
Thank you, Joe, for coming on today.
You're welcome.
But before we get into all that, Grant, what you been into, buddy?
Oh, since the last episode, not a whole lot.
You've been crying over basketball games, haven't you?
Shoot. Absolutely.
All of them.
Man, Gators had a very early exit, and I'm not even going to get into it. But
hey, it wasn't as early as ours.
Yeah, that's true. Could I guess a day later. But, man, I'm not going to get into it. But, no, we did that. Watched that. Last night we had a University of Kentucky Ducks Unlimited banquet up in Lexington. Had a good time. Pretty good turnout. This was their first ever banquet. This is their first year being the chapter. Had a good time. Won a few things and, supported conservation.
What was the painting?
It
looked cool.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them at other banquets this year, and it's called Granddad's Gift.
Okay.
And Dad saw it, and he's like, "Man, that's a cool, cool painting."
Right.
But it's a young man, probably 10, 12 years old, something like that, holding up a Canada goose, and his grandfather's
memory
shadow. Yeah, it's kind of in the background of it, and just a really cool, and I bought it for Dad because he's done a lot to bring up especially Everly and Easton and waterfowl, and he's been a good mentor to me, and I thought, well, it's gonna be pretty cool, and I know he's gonna appreciate it, especially once, the kiddos start getting a little bit older.
Absolutely.
Had a good time up there. And we had our bingo night here about a week and a half ago.
Yeah. That was a daggone blast.
Great time with that.
It was
fun. I've told y'all before, but I appreciate you all did a lot at that thing. We had a great turnout for it, and probably going to have another one in probably July or August. It was a huge hit.
I could easily get addicted on that.
Yes.
Like every Friday night, yes. I'd be throwing money left and right. Tiffany would kick me out of the house.
Oh, yeah. Been doing a lot with DU here the last few days, and there's some stuff going on politically-wise that I don't really want to get into at the moment, but we might save that for later in the episode. But there's some stuff going around the house that I don't know, could be good, could be bad. We'll find out. But just staying busy with Ducks Unlimited right now. What about you, Brian?
Oh, I'd say about the same as you, just very, very, very busy. But yep, bingo night, that was fun. Got Waylon a 20 gauge semi-automatic SKB.
Shout out Barry.
Yep, shout out Barry, thank you. I'll see you this Tuesday night. So, got him taken care of, so we're going to have to cite that in here soon, get him ready for turkey season. And, got a construction project going on in Lexington I'm working on with the nonprofit. And other than that, baseball season. So, we officially started this week. We had coaches draft last Sunday. Got the boys all drafted and put on team. We're ready. Waylon's ready. I'm ready. It's spring's in the air. Now I got a yard to mow. So
definitely.
But no, everything else is good. I'm just ready to see what the spring holds. So
definitely. Walker.
We got Walker.
I haven't been near as busy as you all.
It's okay. Rest for us.
Hey, I've been playing a lot of NASCAR Heat 5
lately. Oh, there you go. All right.
I'm enjoying that. Having trouble in the dirt track right now, though. I'm not good at short tracks.
I guarantee you're doing a lot better than one of our buddies from Gary County that rolled his three times yesterday practicing.
What?
Who? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Hooked a corner a little too hard practicing and rolled it three times.
Do somebody that dirt track races?
White Boyd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
So, yeah, he's got his own car. Rolled the sucker, dude.
That sucks. Unfortunate.
Yeah. Nah, he'll have it straight back out quick.
No. That's about all I've been doing. I've been relaxing.
There you go. How's the van? Just real quick.
Well, it's starting to get warmer, so hopefully soon I will have a functioning lawn ornament.
There you go.
Hey, can we put a flower box on it? I might do that to mine.
A flower box?
Yeah.
That's what Rachel was doing when I left. She was getting some flowers ready.
Be like what they do on the side of the interstates and stuff like that for the loved ones, so you can do it for your car in your backyard.
My van in the backyard. That I need to get rid of.
Oh, gosh. All right. Okay. Well, Joe, that's our pretty much just our warm-up segment of what we got going on. But if you'd like to hit on anything, not really sure too much about your personal life that you want to share, but if you got any hobbies or anything that you've been tearing into and want to include, you're more than welcome. You got the floor.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you. One of the things that I have gotten into in recent years is beekeeping.
Oh, that's cool.
That's very cool.
It's been a fascinating journey. So that's a really busy time for us.
One might call you a busy bee then, huh?
Keeping them from swarming and making sure you're going to keep the colony right for honey production when the flow hits is what everybody's doing with bees right now, and you pretty much have to inspect your colonies weekly.
So how many hives do you have?
I currently have about 15.
Oh, wow. So, care. That's awesome.
I say that like it's a lot. Is that a lot? I have no idea.
It's a lot for someone who's working.
Yeah,
the weather's not right. You can't get in them. You have to have the right sunny, warm days, or you're pulling frames of brood out and they chill, and you're killing bees. So you don't want to do that.
So a man that's in your field, how many hours a week do you work?
Pardon?
Sorry about that. You cut in and out. I interrupted you. I was just curious. A man that does your job as a regional biologist. How many hours a week do you work, roughly?
So, we at the state are on a 37.5-hour work week, but with turkey trapping, trying to wrap up banding turkeys, many times I'm sitting in a blind waiting on turkeys to come to the bait.
That'd be so cool.
I get some overtime in, comp time, basically, that I'll take off and hunt during turkey season.
There you go.
Hey, that's a good trade-off.
I love comp time. Comp time is a pretty good swing.
So, Joe, just real quick about the beekeeping, two questions. One, how many hours a week roughly do you usually do, work with the bees? You know, and I know it depends upon the weather. The other question is, we have a couple guys here in Mercer County. I don't know if you know any of the Suttons, but they do a lot of beekeeping as well. But yeah, so I guess, how many hours a week roughly, maybe average, I guess, are you messing with the bees right now?
Well, compared to the Suttons, I'm a hobbyist.
Yeah.
They have hundreds.
Yes.
I might have to have 4 hours a week right now, depending on whether I need to reduce a colony, take a box off, switch some frames around. But that's maximum right now that I'm putting into them, about 4 hours a week.
Okay. Man, that's crazy. So, just one other, one other thing. But
you going to get into beekeeping grant?
No, gosh, no. we'll dive into turkeys here in a minute. But do you do? I know you said you turkey hunt. Do you do? Any other kind of hunting outside of turkeys?
Oh yeah, I do it all. There's hardly anything that I haven't. I have taken a couple of swords in Western Kentucky. So swamp rabbits, grouse. I used to have setters. I grouse hunted pretty hard. Waterfowl. I've had numerous labs. Hunting Central Kentucky for ducks and geese. Although I did start out working at the Sloughs WMA and did some wood duck hunting down there.
Okay.
That'd
be cool. Mm-hmm. All right. That's cool. I'm still amazed by the beekeeping.
I was going to say that.
It's throwing you off.
So we got you on today because, like we said, turkey season is, I think, 3 weeks from yesterday.
I bet he knows.
I want to talk a little bit about turkey hunting. What was that?
That season is 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. He's coming up before then. So what is the... at least for the state of Kentucky, what's the population looking like, bird wise for the state?
So, with the trapping that is going on across the state, we're seeing quite a few juvenile birds, which is always a good sign. Last couple of years, it's been fairly decent. So. When you see lots of Jakes and Jennies, you know you had a pretty good hatch.
Right.
As far as what our total population is, I could randomly throw a number at. We harvest around 30,000 gobblers every year.
Okay.
So you got to consider that we're not harvesting a third of the gobblers that are available. So we know there's at least probably 100,000 gobblers out there.
Right.
And how many hens per gobbler do you think there are? Well, maybe five. So if there's five times as many gobblers as there are hens, we've got 500,000 turkeys anyway.
Right.
But that's just simple math and nothing more than a swag.
Yeah. Swag is.
You know what a swag is, Grant?
Scientific?
No.
Scientific wild ass guess.
There you go. Okay.
Exactly.
So, Joe, compared to 10 years ago, in your opinion, do you believe that the population about the same, rising, low, declining? What, in your opinion?
Well, 10 years. Well. We've had a lot of really wet springs. I do a lot of fishing. I live on the Kentucky River, and we haven't had a successful shad spawn on the river in almost 10 years because it's been rainy in spring and silted up the water. And the time of year that turkey poults are hitting the ground, when you have a lot of rains, it's really tough on them. They're not good at thermoregulating. The hen pretty much has to brood them.
Right.
And if any kind of predator busts them off, they're peeping and calling, and they get hypothermic really quick. So dry weather in the spring is a plus. That's one thing we can't control.
Right.
We had a pretty dry spring last year, so that's awesome.
Okay.
And we'll see that. The results of the hatch that we had this year will show up as abundant two-year-olds next year.
Okay. So would you say maybe it's about the same as?
I would say it's fluctuating. Nothing is going to remain at a steady increase or a steady flat rate.
Right.
You're going to have ups and downs based on weather conditions and based on there could be some disease issues. We're testing for disease when we ban birds. We collect blood from a certain percentage of birds to be tested for disease to see whether there are some problematic diseases that are very contagious. We haven't gotten any results from that yet, but it's all in part of the research.
Okay. Do you you know, I hear a lot of people. I've got a couple buddies that, you know, they think, you know, maybe turkey population isn't as strong because, you know, in the, you know, older days, you know, everybody, you know, maybe not everybody, but a lot more people, you know, trapped for, you know, for, right, you know, coons.
That's how I made my way through college, actually, was trapping.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
You know, and I mean, it's, you know, I live on a farm here in Mercer County, and, you know, I've got some turkeys, but it seems like every time I drive back on the farm, you know, I drove back on the farm yesterday and saw two coyotes. I mean, it's like every other time I drive back there, you know, I see coyotes. And you know, I don't know if you know, not as many people, you know, trapping or, you know, varmint hunting, you know, is affecting the population. You know, yeah, you know, when I'm cutting hay, that first cutting, it seems like every year, I mean, I don't see that hen get off that nest until it's, I mean, almost too late.
And that's a key thing. You know, if we could adjust our timing of mowing,
right,
it would really make a difference. You know, yes. I'm going to put a plug in for people to plant native grasses for hay, because you cut it at a later time of year.
Yep.
And the peak of the nesting is already over.
Yes.
And that's one of the things about turkeys, is the fact that they all should be nesting at the same time. If that is occurring, then predation isn't as big of a factor. It's when they get disturbed off a nest and they have to re-nest, and the nesting is carried on for 3 months, that predation is, right, more of a factor on those individual nests.
How many, you brought up nesting there and re-nesting, how many times can a hen re-nest, you know, if she gets bumped off of, you know, one nest? How many times, you know, how many times can she re-nest in a season?
It depends. I mean, if she's already starting to incubate and the nest gets predatorized, she's probably used up too much of her,
yeah,
energy, her fat bodies, to be able to do it again. But if it's during the laying period, she may do it a second or a third time.
Okay.
But some interesting data that's come out of some of Dr. Chamberlain's research is that a very small percentage of hens are successful at nesting, but they are particularly successful year after year.
Mm.
So,
okay,
the hens that are good at picking the right spot to nest and raising the poults are important to the population.
Right. Okay.
Are extreme athletes of hens.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, you want me to ask him a question now?
Yeah.
So, so I guess on the whole populace and good breed production years, and is there any one thing or particular item that you all see that trends to be a larger reason for a good production year to a bad one? I know you already mentioned it being the moisture, the wet, if it's a really wet season. Is that something that you all look at, or is there other things that could cause a really bad, sharp decline in a production year?
In extreme cases, I mean, extreme drought could also impact brood survival, because the insects aren't there, the lush grasses aren't there for, you know, them to be able to hide in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that could be a problem. We seldom have that in Kentucky, but other states may. One of the big pluses for us, you know, our record harvest was in 2010, and that was 2 years after our major cicada hatch.
Mm.
We're coming up on another cicada hatch. I know I've seen some things on the internet that says it's going to be this year, but it's actually going to be 2025 for us in this part of the state.
Okay.
And when you have an abundance of those type of insects, predators that normally are preying on turkey poults are getting an easy food source and not going after turkeys. And turkeys themselves are eating these protein sources. But the fact that, you know, everything else that's potentially going to eat a turkey has got a full belly, that increases poult survival.
Right.
Okay.
So, and then let's turn a topic. You've got something that I'm gonna steal Grant's thunder before he gets a chance to ask you about it. So, on the tracking side of it and the growth, and you're all monitoring birds, so you're banding now. Correct. So, y'all been doing that for how many years?
Three. This is our third year.
Okay.
He told us.
Yeah, he told us before we started recording.
I thought he told us while we were recording.
Jeez, Walker. All right. So you've been doing it for 3 years. When do you all plan to have research start coming in on that to where you all can crunch numbers?
There's other states that are doing it at the same time.
Okay.
So Tennessee, I think, maybe Ohio. I'm not sure of all three states. I could be wrong there. But Tennessee for sure. Basically, in Kentucky, we're trying to ban 300 gobblers each year. A certain percentage of those gobblers have a reward band on them. So that's, you know from waterfowl banding projects, that's sort of how you determine the rate that bands get called in. Because everybody's going to call in that reward band. And it's just sort of a way of ground truthing the number of bands you put out there and the return rates.
Right.
But
so
this year's been a tough year trapping.
So this year, go ahead.
This year's been a tough year trapping because of the abundant mass that we had. There's still acorns out there right now on the ground.
Right.
And the weather, we had a couple cool spells, but for the most part, it's been very mild weather. And when there's lots of stuff out there to eat, turkeys just aren't running to the bait like they would be if it was cold for an extended period of time.
Right.
So it's nothing for us to be sitting in a blind and see the turkeys, but they're just, walking around eating clover, scratching around in the woods, and just don't show up at the bait site.
They're just living their best life right now.
They're fat. Wow. We've had some 28-pound birds that we've
caught. Shoot, yeah. I've had a 25-pounder one time, but that's the biggest I had. So
that's the biggest I've harvested as well.
At inch and, I think the one side, if I remember right, inch and a quarter and inch and an eighth were my spurs. And a really fat 9-inch beard. I killed it in Knott County, Kentucky, and I think it just drug a lot of the beard off. So,
but man, where it was going uphill.
Yeah. So, okay, so with the banding, my next question would be is, obviously, I'm sure you can't tell us exact locations and stuff like that, but what zones in the state or what areas are you all kind of focusing on with the banding? Are you all trying to keep it central? Are you hitting more the higher harvest counties?
It's east to west. We have numerous regional biologists and game management foremen at WMAs, that are doing some of this public land trapping. Most of it for me is properties that I have access to. If we can get landowners that are willing to put bait out for us, it creates a great opportunity and reduces our man hours. And we can just look at a camera and go, okay, we need to move a net over there and catch those birds.
Okay. So is that something that we, even at our level of not being a part of fish and wildlife, but being conservationists, is that something that with our contacts with farmers in central Kentucky and stuff that we can spread that word, and that's something that can be filtered back to you all in the means that, say, Joe, if you wanted to come and band somewhere and we had contacts or resources, that would give you all opportunity to have more access?
Absolutely. I mean, if someone, who's deer hunting, for example, and have bait out, they've got a bunch of gobblers that are coming, let us know they're about Thanksgiving, and we'll get you some bait, keep baiting it, and we'll shoot a rocket net over and put some jewelry on them.
Okay. All right. Well, cool. That's always interesting to us because it's curious. I'm always curious to see how fish and wildlife and works with the landowners and gets out there and seeks out the properties. I know Grant and myself have been a part of a goose banding years back. We haven't been able to do that, though, in probably 5 or 6 years. It's been a long time since we've been a part of it.
So where did you help awesome. That?
We got to help out at
Shaker Village.
Shaker Village.
Yep.
Okay. So
very good.
I think two of your all's may have just been biologists. I don't remember what their position or titles were, but they were in kayaks and they worked them across the pond right down below the main pond. Mm-hmm. And worked them across one side, and we just took orange net and wrangled them up, banded us some geese that day. So it was cool.
The threat of avian influenza,
yes,
sort of changed our policy on allowing the public to help. But in this past year, that was relaxed a little bit. That and COVID as well. So mm-hmm. we've kind of had a few messed up years.
So getting to know a guy like you might be able to help us weasel our way back in, helping with conservation every now and then.
Sure.
Okay. I enjoy it.
On a wood duck shot with me sometime, or when we band geese, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, we would love that. Yeah. I would love that. So wood duck is my favorite duck, and it's the one duck that around here I haven't killed, and it bothers me. But I just enjoy it. It's my background on my phone, it's my background on my laptop at work. It's everything. But that'd be a cool piece.
Joe, be good.
Joe, I've got one more question about banding, and then we can move on to something else. So, you know, I everybody wants to know, you know, like you shot a duck in Arkansas, and it was from Saskatchewan. You know, obviously turkeys, you know, they don't travel that far. What do you know from your recovery? You know, if you've had recoveries, you know, what's the farthest one that one has traveled, you know, since being banded?
Our turkey coordinator, Zach Danks, would have that information, and really until the research is wrapped up, we've just been given tidbits.
Okay.
I do know we tagged some gobblers with radio transmitters, GPS radio transmitters, a few years ago to test some equipment. We also have a pretty major mortality study going on down in Western Kentucky with radio transmitters. Nevertheless, I had a gobbler that was tagged that he hung around the same area. We tagged him in the fall, like in September, August, September.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed within about a 1,000-acre area until April. On April 2nd, he moved 5 or 6 miles away from where he had spent all of his life. He was a 2-year-old bird.
Yeah.
And he got to a certain point. He got on a property, stayed there until the season opened around the 15th, and was killed on that farm on opening day.
Hmm.
Wow.
So,
I mean, just took a journey, just went completely north of where he was for, you know, it seemed like the entire time we had him tagged.
And Joe, let me ask you, so in that situation, do you all try and figure out if he was being pursued by a predator, or if there was a big weather front that pushed him, or something like that that may have, like, moved him in a storm? Do you all, I mean, I assume you all compile information like that and try and find those answers, but is that something that you all do?
Well, you can compare it to weather data, but this in particular, the GPS callers, not callers, it's a backpack, actually log a point every hour of the day during the daylight.
Okay.
So that data, you know, was downloadable. It didn't indicate, you know, that he was frantically trying to escape anything. He just went in a straight line pretty much north and roosted in a ravine, moved another mile the next day, and then when he hit this particular farm, just hung out and literally stayed within a 150-acre area pretty much for about 10 days. It was really bizarre.
Yeah. Just
went on an old walkabout, you know, huh?
he did.
That's very cool. That's neat to know that all that stuff's going on in our own state. Walker, you got any
research project that's in Western Kentucky? There's around 50 or 60 hens that are tagged and another 20 gobblers.
Okay.
That'll be some good research when that gets compiled and completed.
Okay. Well, if you want to private message us locations, we can help get those out of the field sooner than later. Oh, goodness.
I plead the fifth.
All right, good. That's a good answer. Walker?
Yeah, Joe, I've got a few questions that are very not turkey related because I'm not much of a turkey guy. I'm just kind of curious, like, what your day-to-day is like and how much time you spend in the office versus in the field.
So I spend as little time in the office as I can.
That's great.
You know, I do public presentations, you know, but for the most part, I'm helping people, giving advice over the phone about how to manage their property for wildlife. When I was a private lands biologist, I was actually meeting with people and looking at their property and giving them advice. We sort of reorganized, and now as a regional biologist, I'm, you know, finding new spots to trap turkeys, finding new spots to trap wood ducks, and dealing with a lot of wildlife damage. So that's not the more enjoyable part of my job, but it is, you know, I am in the field and working with people and trying to give them solutions to problems that they're having.
Okay. And my other question is, how long have you been with Fish and Wildlife?
So I started in 1989.
Wow.
And I did spend 2.5 years working as a biologist for the Kentucky Division of Forestry. But my first job with the state was actually trapping deer and taking them to Eastern Kentucky where we didn't have deer populations.
Hmm. Oh, you know, trust me. I deal with those rascals down there in Knox County. That's a zone four can be brutal on your hopes and dreams of a good season. One moment it's there and the next it's just poof, it's gone.
Yeah, that's a fact.
I won't disclose where or not, but they, my wife's family's farm down there used to have elk until, I think it was back in the early 2000s, somewhere around there. They came in and moved a bunch of them out west. And, that herd is now on the opposite side of the county, on the Perry Knott line. And, we don't have to deal with them, but still cool to think that once upon a time they were on those hills.
Right. Yeah, I was part of the crew that brought the first elk to Kentucky.
Oh, that is cool.
Oh, that's really cool.
So how did you get a part of that? How did you get roped in on that? Is that something you were assigned, or did you see an opportunity? You're like, this would be really cool to be a part of this team.
Well, I was very passionate about elk. I'd gone to Colorado bow hunting elk for several years prior to our elk reintroduction, and I was just lucky enough to be invited along. I'm the last one that went that's still working. Everybody else is retired.
So, not to take a hard veer, but on elk, how do you think we are on population for the state of Kentucky? I mean, are we sitting where you think our state should in elk, or do you think the population can be larger or smaller than what it is to be good for our land?
Well, you know, I'm not the elk biologist, but I do know a little bit about elk.
Right.
You know, we put them on a landscape that was recently reclaimed. And while they can do okay in forest situations, the fact is all those reclaimed strip mines are now growing up into forest. And you don't have as good a survival with calves when you don't have as much open area.
Right. Okay.
So in my opinion, you know, the elk habitat is declining every year to some degree. Elk obviously have learned to avoid people.
Right.
You know, all the dumb elk got killed. You know, and the same thing is kind of happening with turkey. You know, turkey were reintroduced in the 80s. You know, my county here, Woodford County, was stocked with 8 birds in 1989.
Okay.
And now, you know, I just looked out the window and had a gobbler and 8 jakes walk across my backyard between my beehives yesterday.
That's so cool. 35 years.
Right. I had a college roommate that actually took feathers from LBL and threw them on the ground under one of my tree stands one time before we ever had turkeys, and I was just freaking out.
Oh, that's dirty.
That's dirty. You know, and I could go with what you're getting at there with the birds are getting smarter, the animals are getting smarter, but they're also the natural selection of it's tough to grow up in a world where the humans are knocking on the door of every habitat around.
Well, you have
the encroachment's rough.
Everything is getting developed. Housing, right. You know, farms disappearing. And another thing that's happening that I've seen is there are now turkeys in places that there were never turkeys before. Places that I never would have thought would have had turkeys.
So speaking of that, can I hit on something real fast?
Absolutely.
So I had a wild story told to me this week, and it was mind-boggling to me because I have some in-laws that live up in Lexington off of Man of War on the south side close to Veterans Park, and they had a turkey, no joke, in their backyard at about 9 o'clock in the morning about a week ago. And my father-in-law hunts, and he has killed turkey, and so obviously the man and his wife know well what a turkey is, and they could not believe their eyes when they saw a turkey in their fenced-in quarter-acre house lot in this nice neighborhood to see just a turkey just there doing its thing. So not sure where it came from. Not sure if it's completely wild or if somebody let go of a pet that they maybe had or something like that. I'm not sure. But you just never know anymore. I mean, I've seen coyotes in the city limits when I work up in Lexington that blow me away. So,
yeah, there's probably not any cities in the state that don't have coyotes.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, they have missing dogs up in Lexington all the time. People, when we used to live up that way, they would be like, my little dog's been missing for like 3 days. If anybody sees it, like, well, it may not be seen again if a predator got a hold of it.
Right. Well, a couple of years ago, there was a bobcat on the sidewalk in front of the barber shop in Versailles.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, and then we had that black bear at UK campus a couple of years ago.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
So, it worked. Listen, we're living on their land, so they're just figuring out how to survive amongst us.
Some of them are doing quite well at it. Others aren't. You know, we talk about turkeys, and one of the perceptions, you know, once turkeys have been hunted and get educated, they get a little wise to our ways. You know, they'll gobble on the roost. They won't gobble after they hit the ground. It takes a year of, really, a good year of two-year-old birds to make us all feel like heroes. And you'll think there's not a turkey around when there's not a lot of two-year-old birds out there. And that's a big part of why everyone's thinking, oh, my gosh, the turkey population is tanking. What do we need to change? You know, the reality, you know, of the hunters that are successful, less than 25% are successful at taking a second bird.
Yep, I agree with that.
I agree. I've never taken a second bird in the
season. So would a bag limit change anything? Well, it would impact a handful of people, but really it wouldn't change anything as far as the turkey population is concerned.
I mean, I agree with you. I probably wouldn't be upset if you took it from 2-1 because I've never had that opportunity to pull a trigger on a second.
Right, but why take opportunity away if it really isn't going to make a significant difference? I guess that's the...
Yep, that's true.
The take home of that.
Right.
You said, Joe, you said something I just want to kind of backtrack a little bit about... You used to work a lot with landowners about, you know, maybe increasing their turkey population on their property. Well, you know, like I said, you know, I've got a little group back here. I've been fortunate enough to kill a couple birds back here. But, you know, there again, you know, the hens, you know, they don't like leaving the nest, you know, until it's, I mean, 5 foot in front of a mower and you're going six, 7 miles an hour. It's very hard to stop, which you know, I usually don't hit them. But, you know, if you leave a 20 by 20 patch in the middle of a field, well, it's going to be pretty, you know, easy right. for a predator to, you know, find it. But, you know, what does someone need to do? You know, what can they do as a landowner to, you know, increase their, you know, their bird population?
I mean, mow less is one of the things for sure that will help. You know, a lot of people don't like that answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just putting it off, you know, another 3 weeks. Now, hay quality can decline, but it's huge to let them at least hatch.
Right.
You know, fallow fielding, you know, if you put in a food plot of some kind of grain or just disc up an area, let it grow up in weeds. That provides some overhead cover, bare ground underneath. It's good for bugging. You get lots of plovers and lespedeza and ragweed, foxtail. You know, all that kind of stuff gives food as well as an insect base for them to feed on. You know, but the key thing is having that overhead cover so they're not easily seen by avian predators.
Right. Well, that's what I was listening to something. It's been a few weeks ago now. But, you know, everybody thinks of, you know, raccoons and possums and coyotes and that a owl will, I mean, wreak havoc on turkeys. That, you know, they were talking, you know, they'll attack them in the roost. And pretty wild to think, you know, another bird would attack another bird, but apparently, I mean, that's a pretty pretty high predator on a turkey.
Right. Yeah, there's several telemetry studies have shown, you know, great horned owls can be one of the major predators on adult gobblers.
Yeah.
You know, once the gobbler is two, you know, a year old, you know, they have pretty good survival rates. It's, you know, bobcats and coyotes certainly can take them, but they're not sitting on a nest on the ground for 28 days like a hen is.
Right.
You know, that's why they're so vulnerable and why, you know, having quality nesting habitat and blocks of it instead of edges is important.
Okay. Well, it definitely is. You know, I mean, you were exactly right. You know, your hay quality goes down, and you know, waiting those extra weeks. You know, we've got a dove field that, you know, we prepare every year, and right now it has winter wheat growing on it, and it'd be really nice if they would just, you know, go nest in the winter wheat, because, you know, I don't bother it until, I don't know, July or, you know, something like that. when do, and I know, you know, it varies, when do most turkey nests hatch by, you know, majority, I guess?
So it varies from year to year a little bit.
Right.
I had a hen that hatched here on my property. I was mowing. I mow trails to my archery targets for the most part. I'm not a big fan of mowing at all, but pushing my mower and a turkey flew off a nest and flew across the river. This has been several years ago.
Yeah.
And the next day I thought, well, I'm gonna see if she came back. So I start the mower up and I go right back down the same trail, and there she was, back on the nest. She had 24 eggs.
Wow.
So it had to be a dump nest. Another hen was laying there.
Yeah.
So I go to the house and I strap a trail camera on a piece of firewood, and I go by it again with the push mower, and I set this camera on a piece of firewood, you know, down on the side of the trail. It couldn't see the nest, but it could see if anything came by the nest.
Right.
And that hen ended up hatching on May 15th. So all those eggs were laid, you know, prior to April 15th.
Right.
Or roughly. Okay. She hatched 18 of the 24.
Hmm.
And there were, the way, you know, she was downhill from the trail just a little bit on the crest of a riverbank. You know, it was a straight wall down for about 8 feet and then another bench down to the river.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that came by her, the thermals going towards the river, it wasn't an easy way to get to the nest. So I had pictures of foxes, coyotes, raccoons coming within 6 feet of her almost every night and not detecting her. Although there were a few nights that she came by the camera at midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm assuming that something flushed her off the nest and she made enough racket that they went after her instead of finding the nest. And then she somehow in the dark made her way back to the nest. So that was pretty cool to see nighttime activity of her coming back.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know any other reason she would have left other than, you know, being flushed.
Right. Yeah, because once they get on the nest, I mean, they basically stay on there, you know, the entire, what is it? It's about a month once they lay, isn't it?
28-day incubation. Yeah, okay. But they will briefly get off and go through, you know, the dew wet grass to add moisture to the eggs. You know, they're not intentionally doing that, but that's sort of what happens. And they don't stay all the time on the nest, but just about all the time. I mean, they may only be gone for 20 minutes of the day.
Okay.
And some days won't leave at all.
I've taken so much from this call. This is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just over here soaking it all in.
Turkeys are neat. And, you know, I know you hit on it. They're very, they adapt and they become very smart very quick.
Yeah.
The ones that want to live.
You know, and if they've been through the ringer with people throwing different things at them, and I mean, it's crazy what they'll, how they'll react. I remember a bird, a big strutter farm that I was hunting back in the good old days, you know, when
it
first opened, you know, if a turkey gobbled, I knew I was going to see that bird. It was like, yeah, he's coming. You know, and we got my brother and I, where we just bow hunted them. We quit hunting them with guns. We wanted the season to last longer. And in the recent years, with, you know, not being as many recruitment, as many new gobblers coming into the population, it was like I'd hit a call and they go, "Oh, that's Joe. I'm going the other way." In fact, I saw a gobbler once, you know, was strutting in a field all by himself. And I was able to get into a tobacco barn there, and I eased up to the door. I got myself in the shadows, and the door was open about 4 inches. And I'm like, okay, if he comes through the gate, he's going to come by me at 10 yards. He's out there strutting, and I gave him a couple of real soft, pretty yelps. And turkeys have been dusting in this barn. And I gave him, you know, real nice series of yelps, and he broke strut and ran away as hard as he could.
Gone. They're interesting birds, and this has been, gosh,
so
fun.
I take it you have probably killed more than just one species of turkey, correct?
So I have not. I took a friend to Florida to kill an Osceola one time, and
yeah,
It wasn't an objective of mine. I hunted a little bit, but
okay.
I was more interested in doing some fishing than I was turkey hunting. But anyway, he got his bird, and I'm like, let's go fishing. Let's go see a buddy over here on Lake Kissimmee.
So have you ever thought about doing the Grand Slam?
I haven't.
Okay. All right. Well, I like that. That's a different take on it. You're attached to one species and happy with what you got. I appreciate that.
It's called being a poor state worker.
fair enough. That's kind of where my dreams are at, too. So, all right.
Boys, y'all have anything else for Mr. Joe?
I don't. Joe, you have filled us with some really good stuff, something that we couldn't have provided for everybody today without you. So I appreciate that. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, just...
Well, I do have one thing that I want to tell people that are discouraged.
Please
do. I see it so many times. Just because a bird doesn't gobble doesn't mean he's not coming in.
Okay.
And so many people get... I put off, you know, I didn't hear a bird today. There used to be birds all the time. What's going on? Well, they're just a little bit, you know, when they're on the ground, you know, there may be bobcats or maybe coyotes or maybe people, you know, when they gobble, somebody goes to them. Just be patient. And don't call as much. It'll pay off.
So you would think, and... It's kind of like duck hunting. You know, you don't need to call all the time. I mean, you don't hear a turkey on the ground just all the time all calling. You know, and
right.
I do.
It's agree. Rare that you can. And something else that I've seen with this turkey trapping, we had a situation where I'll use a Fox Pro with some turkey sounds to get them to come to the bait quicker sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bunch of, this was in January a couple of years ago, last year. Birds were gobbling like crazy. And I could hear hens yelping and hens cutting. And all of a sudden, you know, these gobblers are in front of us. And there's seven gobblers. And the vocalizations that those gobblers were making, if I didn't see him make them, I would have thought it was a hen. I would have swore it was a hen.
Hmm. Okay.
Absolutely amazing. I mean, there's no way I would have thought it was a gobbler making that sound. So sometimes you think somebody else is calling to a bird or they're with hens. They may or may not be. It may be subordinate gobblers that are doing some yelping back and forth. Hmm. So don't give up. Stick it out.
Yeah, good to know.
Yeah. That's neat. Well, guys, I mean, I don't have anything. This has been terrific. And Joe, I can't thank you enough for being on.
Taking time out of your Sunday.
Yes.
We appreciate that.
Very much so.
Yes, sir.
Happy to.
Yeah, just trying to.
If anybody sees sick birds, you know, some of them that might have lesions or pustules on their heads, you know, contact your local biologist and let them know. They may tell you to put it down. We need to test those birds for disease.
Okay.
Something just be on the lookout for.
Okay.
Guys?
One thing we haven't asked you, Joe, and I was curious, what kind of counties, what is your radius? Where do you particularly cover in this area?
I'm the southern part of the Bluegrass region. I basically cover a band of counties from Winchester to Lebanon. You know, a couple counties wide.
Yeah.
Madison, Jessamine, Garrett, Mercer, Ball, Washington.
Okay.
Woodford, Marion.
Cool.
Anderson, right. Franklin.
So if I came across something, you know, back here, you know, I'd just, you know, contact you.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Yeah,
cool.
And I'll be hunting in Garrett County this spring season.
Probably hunting in Jessamine. So.
Yep. Yep. So, all right. Well, I appreciate that, Joe. Walker, you got anything, brother?
That's it for me.
Appreciate it again, Joe. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Hey, good luck hunting.
Joe, could you send Walker a picture or something of you working or doing what you do with banding of the turkeys? We'd like to upload that if we could on our Facebook and Instagram
okay.
for this podcast, if that's all right with you.
That's fine.
Okay.
Cool.
I'll send a picture. Well, I don't know if I've got Walker's. Did you?
Just send it to Grant.
Yeah, yeah, just send it to Grant.
Sorry.
Yeah, but you got my email now, too, so.
All right.
But
Appreciate it, Joe.
That is it from us this week. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Joe, for being here. Follow us on our socials. We are the BD Waterfowl Podcast on Facebook, the BD Waterfowl Pod on Instagram. Like, subscribe, share the podcast with your friends. Give us a 5-star review.
Send in any questions you may have.
Yep, send in some questions. Facebook, Instagram. There's the Q&A section on Spotify.
And Joe, just real quick before you go, where can people where can people find you? I know you're on Facebook.
Our website.
Okay.
Contact us button on our website. When you hit that and enter your county, your regional biologist, your public lands biologist, your fisheries biologist, your conservation officer, all those contacts will come up for you on fw.ky.gov.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you very much. And this is officially the end.
Y'all have a good one.
See y'all in the next one.
See ya.